Bag huge savings on your painting projects at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim, and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect choice for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. DuraFighter interior paint starts at $27.75 a gallon. Get an additional 15% savings on all Dutch Boy paints when you put it in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
You were on your way home when you died. It was a car accident. Nothing particularly remarkable, but fatal nonetheless. You left behind a wife and two children. It was a painless death. The EMTs tried their best to save you, but to no avail. Your body was so utterly shattered, you were better off, trust me. And that's when you met me.
Wait, what happened?
You asked.
Where am I?
You died, I said, matter-of-factly. No point in mincing words.
There was a truck, and it was skidding.
Yep, I said.
I died?
Yep, but don't feel bad about it. Everyone dies, I said. You looked around. There was nothingness, just you and me.
What is this place?
You asked.
Is this the afterlife?
More or less, I said.
Are you God?
You asked. Yep, I replied. I'm God.
My kids. My wife.
You said. What about them?
Will they be all right?
That's what I like to see, I said. You just died and your main concern is for your family. That's good stuff right there. You looked at me with fascination. To you, I didn't look like God. I just looked like some man, or possibly a woman. Some vague authority figure, maybe. More of a grammar school teacher than the Almighty. Don't worry, I said. They'll be fine. Your kids will remember you as perfect in every way. They didn't have time to grow contempt for you. Your wife will cry on the outside, but will secretly be relieved. To be fair, your marriage was falling apart. If it's any consolation, she'll feel very guilty for feeling relieved.
Oh, he said. So what happens now? Do I go to heaven or hell or something?
Neither, I said. You'll be reincarnated.
Ah, he said. So the Hindus were right.
All religions are right in their own way, I said. Walk with me. He followed me as we strode along through the void.
Where are we going?
Nowhere in particular, I said. It's just nice to walk while we talk.
That was the beginning of The Egg by Andy Weir. Follow the link in the description to experience the full narrative. We highly recommend finishing this story as it has a captivating perspective on life, death, and the possible answer to why, which we will discuss on future episodes. Welcome to Eternal Threads, a podcast on the vast fabric of human beliefs and our attempt to weave it all together. This is our introductory episode where we will provide an overview of the topics we invite you to explore with us, take a little time to tell you about ourselves and about what we believe in. So walk with us and talk with us as we explore this rich tapestry of faith together here on Eternal Threads.
Welcome to Eternal Threads. I'm Emily Brown. I'll be one of your hosts.
And I'm Daniel Klein, your other co-host.
I really loved the story of the egg. It opened my mind to how connected we all are and had a big impact on how I interact with the world. It illustrates that we are truly a child of God and puts a perspective on treating your neighbor the way you would want to treat yourself.
Yeah, that's a great, great point. That's awesome. And it's really stories like these and others that brought me back to traditional narratives like the Bible. It helped me understand many of its stories in a whole new way, and its short stories, modern books, ancient texts, and others like these that we are just so excited to share and discuss with you.
If you're interested, there's also a great animation of it on YouTube and helps to put a visual to the story for those who would rather watch it, and we can add a link to that as well.
That's really the great thing about modern times. I listen to a lot of audiobooks myself, and just the fact that we can all access this information in the ways that we best learn, whether that's audio, visual, reading, is just incredible. Now, more than ever, we have the opportunity to cultivate our Christ consciousness through understanding these stories and realizing that we are all sharing the same journey. So the egg really is a great starting point to some of the reasons why we have the beliefs that we do. so make sure to finish that story before next episode.
Considering how short this story is, there are several points it touches on that are uniquely fascinating. I'm excited to dig in and hear what you think. But until then, let's put a bookmark in the egg until our next episode and go over what we'll be covering in our show and the types of content we're going to provide.
First and foremost, we are going to be digging into history. It won't necessarily always be chronological, but we want to spend a lot of time exploring different periods to figure out the whys of how societies were built, of how the human experience evolved. By adding cultural and historical context to these ancient stories, we can seek out the truth that lies between fact and fable.
Ancient sites, important figures, and rites and rituals are all things we will talk about. There's so much richness in the human story, it's hard to pick where to start. But we've decided to start with the history of Christianity.
Starting first with the origin stories of all the most popular current Christian denominations, like many, we ask the question, why? Why so many fragments for one faith? So we want to begin by trying to frame the religious world as it was built in the West.
From the establishment of the Roman Catholic Church to the emergence of the Book of Mormon, every branch of Christianity has undergone divisions for various reasons. With the multitude of choices available today, understanding the distinctions between them can be challenging. We're going to provide an informational and historic foundation by taking a deeper dive into specific details that aren't commonly spoken about, and other ideas and interpretations of the scriptures from around the world.
We're going to kick things off with a concise overview of some of the most widely recognized denominations, providing a foundational understanding of contemporary faith. After these first several episodes, we'll plunge into deeper explorations of various historical eras and sacred texts. Our initial deep focus will be on the era of Jesus and the Greco-Roman world in which he lived. It's intriguing to note the striking parallels between the cultural backdrop of that time and the traditions observed in many Christian denominations today. What captivates me personally is how delving into history brings many of the biblical narratives to life, validating them as genuine historical records. Naturally, this curiosity propels me to uncover even more narratives and texts, all which provide a piece of the whole.
When I was younger, I really thought the stories in the Bible were just fictional stories, especially since I had a children's Bible with little illustrations. When the information is presented in the form of a picture book, it's hard to see it as being true. I completely understand why those exist. They make the Bible more child-friendly and more easily digestible, but in a way, it undermines its importance. So it's fascinating to me now as an adult to find connections from other parts of history to the scriptures in the Bible and how those scriptures relate to what was happening in the world at that time.
Yeah, the story of Noah always gets me. It seems to be the first story that is taught to children because of the visuals of the animals. It seems real friendly, him on the boat. But what a brutal story that God is trying to teach us. It is just not something that is necessarily kid-friendly when you find the truth. But the Bible itself can be pretty mysterious and not always transparent with its symbolism and metaphors mixed directly with actual historical context. There are just so many differences between how our ancestors viewed the world and how we see it today. The spiritual world was front and center in the daily lives of our ancestors, and I personally think our purely secular modern society can learn a lot from reminding ourselves that we are first and foremost a soul seeking connection to the divine.
It's enchanting to travel back in time into the bustling era in which Jesus walked the earth. Picture it. Hellenistic beliefs were all the rage, and polytheism was the norm. Back then, faith had a whole different vibe. It was all about seeking favor for blessings in this life, not the next, and folks saw themselves as distinct from the gods, not made in their image. It's clear that for Christianity to blossom into what it is today, some radical shifts in thinking had to happen. It's like watching the seedling grow into a mighty oak tree, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's just such a rich story of how that got built, and that's something we're really excited to talk about. But it is crucial to recognize how the era profoundly influenced not just the scriptures, but also the rich tapestry of traditions that define Christianity. Think about it. The story of Jesus shares striking similarities with other divine and holy figures from various cultures worldwide. And those traditions and holidays we cherish today played a significant role in Christianity's success. They allowed the faith to absorb and adapt other cultural practices into a religion that resonated with people from all walks of life. Take Dionysus, for example. Talk about a rock star god of the time. There are some great parallels between Dionysus and Jesus, and especially when it comes to the ritual of drinking wine. It's like history is weaving this intricate web of connections, showing us how different faiths and traditions can intersect and inspire one another. The more that reveals itself, the more incredible the story becomes. One thing that didn't sink in with me until I began this recent journey was the fact that it took over 300 years from the death of Jesus for Christianity to become the official religion of Rome. 300 years.
That's wild.
Such a long time. So many things change. We can barely remember 30 minutes ago sometimes, let alone basing our entire culture on something that was long and gone, you know.
I will admit that when I think about these historical moments, it's easy to think, oh, it's only 300 years, because in the grand scheme of things, that is just a blip in time. But man, a lot can happen in 300 years. And the things that happened in that particular span of time played an integral part in how life is as we know it today. For example, there are a few female figures in Christian history who played a major role in the survival of this religion. There's Saint Thecla, who was persecuted for following Jesus' teachings, through Saint Paul, and was thrown into an arena with a lion and lived. There were martyrs like Perpetua and Felicity, who were both new mothers, also thrown into an arena as punishment because they wouldn't renounce their faith. Perpetua went so far as to guide the soldier's sword to her own throat because she would rather be killed than say she wasn't a Christian. There were also prominent figures of authority who played significant roles in history, such as Pliny the Younger, a Roman magistrate. He is known for having penned a letter to the Roman emperor of his era, in which he described his conditional release of a group of Christians contingent upon the renunciation of their faith. This correspondence stands as one of the earliest historical records concerning Christians, and it was written in the year 110 AD.
Back in that time, folks generally worshiped gods for a stroke of luck or some good fortune. The concept of willingly enduring suffering for your beliefs, well, was downright baffling. Especially for those knee-deep in polytheistic rituals, spirituality was more about going through the motions than standing up for any particular, especially narrow, set of beliefs. And let's not forget about the absolute power of monotheism. It really made it for a difficult sell to the established structures. Suddenly, the idea of a single, all-powerful deity overshadowing even the mightiest rulers and kings? Talk about shaking up the social order. It's wild to think that the same struggle of authority and interpretation that stirred up trouble back then is still causing ripples in today's world. We'll definitely be diving into those juicy topics as we unpack the complexities of faith. Get ready for some enlightening discussions.
You're definitely right. Historical context is one thing, but interpretation is where the real spiritual showdown happens these days. That's why we're going to roll up our sleeves and dive deep into the texts themselves. From ancient scrolls to contemporary writings, there's a treasure trove of wisdom waiting to be unearthed. I'm sure you'll see what I see, and that they speak to universal truths more than differences. I know I have some favorites I can't wait to discuss and analyze. But what about you, Daniel? What books and texts are you excited about?
Well, first and foremost, let's start with the Bible. I never read the Bible much when I was a kid and when I was younger, but of course, that's what we're going to be talking a lot about here. And there's just so much wisdom in it. There's so many things that just, it gets a bad rap. And a lot of people don't spend the time with it because of their relationship to religion and organization and all that, but they're really missing out on the story of us. However, the Bible was edited a lot throughout time. So there is a couple other books that I really enjoy, and there's other texts that have been discovered or have been around for a while that just weren't in the New Testament or Old Testament that are highly worth checking out and discussing. And we will. One of my favorites is a book called The New Testament. It's edited and commented on by Hal Tosick, and it covers not only the New Testament in its current form, but brings in it a bunch of other texts like the Nag Hammadi scriptures, which includes the Gospel of Mary, the Gospel of Thomas, and just a bunch of other texts that add a little bit of clarity and just a lot more flavor to these stories. Another one is a big book called The Lost Books of the Bible, The Great Rejected Texts. It's organized by Joseph Lumpkin. It covers a couple of these things in the New Testament section, but it's the Old Testament and Genesis stories that I find the most fascinating. It has a couple extra books of Adam and Eve, It covers the book of Enoch, which I'd love to jump into and dig a little bit more into, and just several other ancient texts that we have all kinds of interesting details in and provides a much deeper story. However, one of my cornerstones right now is The Immortality Key by Brian Marescu. And actually, by default, another book called The Road to Eleusis, which was co-written by Albert Hoffman. If you don't know that name, feel free to look it up. But they're both in the same vein with the idea that it talks about some of the Greek and Roman traditions of the time and some of the beliefs that they had and some of the technology and tools that they had in order to conduct their spiritual practices. And it was some of this actual historical context that really unified my beliefs and unified the stories of Jesus with the actual historical context. Not only that, but the conversion of the entire state of Rome, which is a pretty hard thing to do. So it's a great read and something I can't wait to discuss. One book that actually got me started down this journey is one called The Celestine Prophecy. The Celestine Prophecy isn't a Christian book. It's really just an adventure story. It's actually a work of fiction. Not as fictional as I first thought, but it is a work of fiction. It's an adventure story talking about, you know, lost Indian manuscripts of the Bible and that someone was trying to hide them from him, and they had to have this whole, you know, issue just to get away from the censorship, really. And although a work of fiction, if you look at the Nag Hammadi scriptures and other things, it might be a little more true than it first led on. So it's kind of funny that something I didn't really understand, well, I understood what I was reading, but I didn't understand the gravity of what I was reading until I actually found out that it is more true than fiction. And that's one important thing that I think modern Christianity is missing, is that metaphysical, sort of mystical aspect of things like meditation, looking inward, and just reminding that we are more spirit than anything else. That's why when I discovered the book, The Cloud of Unknowing, which is actually a communication between a Christian teacher and a student back in the 1300s, it really revolves itself around contemplative prayer and seeking the God within you. I do believe that when we quiet ourselves and we live in the present moment, really shutting out the noise and detaching ourselves from the material world is when we really hear the voice of God. So it was just really amazing to read this text from way back in the 1300s, preaching God in a way that made sense to me. It's more the relationship over religion and, you know, those types of things that are becoming more popular today. Last but not least, one recent favorite has actually been a book by Rainn Wilson called Soul Boom.
Whenever I'm about to do something, I think, would an idiot do that? And if they would, I do not do that thing.
Ah, such wisdom. But seriously, though, Rainn Wilson is a member of the Baha'i Faith. I'm learning more and more about the Baha'i Faith. It's extremely fascinating. It sounds just like a lot of other religions because they speak these universal truths, but their practices seem very human. It seems very kind of connected to nature, and I'd love to learn more about it. Obviously, we want any and all of these authors on to come speak with us, and I'm going to be especially manifesting a sit-down with Rainn Wilson. Just big fan of The Office. It should be so much fun to talk with them. So hopefully we can make that happen. So, Emily, what about you? What texts and books are you excited to talk about?
Well, of course, the Bible will be my number one, but a close second is Inner Engineering by Sadhguru. I'm working my way through it for the third time now since last year. The first two times I listened to the audio version, which is an experience in itself. His voice is hypnotic and so comforting. But I wanted to go through it again and really mark up my favorite parts, which I find myself wanting to reference in conversation, so I grabbed a physical copy. Sadhguru is a yogi guru, and this book is a great tool, not just for learning about yoga, but for getting to know your body and soul and how everything really connects and finding joy in the process. Next, I would also have to say Celestine Prophecy by James Redfield, since you had me read it. When I started it a couple years ago, I was at a point in my life where I was still very much stuck in my own head, and I had a hard time taking it seriously because I wasn't on this spiritual journey yet. So about halfway through the book, I took a break, had a couple months of self-reflection, and had a spiritual breakthrough of sorts, which we'll get to later. It's written in a way that puts the reader directly into the story because the main character doesn't have a name or any descriptors. So I came back to the book with a new understanding, which made the ending even more impactful. Next, I'd have to say Your Butt Is Too Big by Maurice Martin. That's B-U-T, butt.
Yeah, Maurice, by the way, is a personal friend of mine. I graduated college with him. He is an incredibly talented individual. We were in choir together, and just the Holy Spirit is always with him. Great guy.
This book is full of motivational tips for when you feel stuck. He even included a whole section of nothing but scriptures to reference and organize them by emotion. It's brilliant. He shares his own personal story, and let me tell you, I was listening to this book at work just sobbing at my desk. I'm so grateful I don't have to share my office with anyone. Maurice gave me the kick and the BUT that I needed. Also in the realm of self-help would be Jordan Peterson's books, 12 Rules for Life and Beyond Order. If you don't know who Jordan Peterson is, I recommend you look him up. He's a very wise man. He's a clinical psychologist and has his own podcast series on the Daily Wire. We just went to his lecture in Akron last week for his new book, We Who Wrestle With God. And I won't give any spoilers for that one since it hasn't released yet, but I will likely be ordering that too to notate and reference later. My last book is Happiness is a Serious Problem by Dennis Prager, also a highly intellectual person. This book has some great thought-provoking points with a different perspective on the very idea of being happy, with an emphasis on having gratitude. You can find more of his work at PragerU.com.
Yeah, those are all great books. And we're going to only go into those books, but so many others as we continue this journey. We are obviously are open to lots of suggestions because it's just the tip of the iceberg as far as what anyone can really discover in the world because there's just so much. So we'd love to hear from you too. But besides the actual texts themselves, we really not only want to invite all the authors of any of these texts on to speak with us, to share their knowledge, but we're really going to also focus on historians, spiritual and religious leaders, and just anyone with knowledge to give us, because we really not only want to speak to you about all these things, but we want to hear it from those that have been living it every day. And there's just no better place than get it from the source.
One really important project that will be part of the Eternal Threads universe and will run as a sub-series is called The Fabric of Faith. We will title these episodes a little bit differently so they stand out, but they will be focused mostly on our direct experiences with faith communities during our journey. Especially with Christianity, I'm sure most of you have a lot of the same questions we do in regard to its assortment of denominations. So not only are we going to discuss the history of these churches, but we're going to go visit them for ourselves.
Yeah, this is actually something that we've been doing for a while, and it just made sense to share our experiences with the world. Each Sunday, we are going to visit a new church. We may visit some churches again, but we're going to try to visit new churches every Sunday, starting with our local community, but eventually expanding across the country and hopefully world. We are then going to help share the church's message and sermon that day with the rest of the world and invite any pastors, priests, and parishioners to come on and share their stories of faith. Eventually, we would like to visit communities outside of the Christian faith, but there we are going to start there first. While our main content is focused on history and literature, this focuses on our unique personal stories that led us to faith.
We've met so many people on our path so far, and even though many of these denominations or even other religions altogether might interpret parts of the scripture very differently or have varying traditions that need to be followed, the love of God flows through them all. We all seek and pray a little differently, but the fact is we all pray. We're all brothers and sisters in Christ, and it's time we start weaving the fabric back together.
Yeah, now this is where we would love to hear from you. Are you an author, professor, or have some expertise you would love to come on air to talk about? Are you proud of your church and want us to share your story on Fabric of Faith? Send us an email at connect@eternalthreads.co. Again, that's connect@eternalthreads.co. So I hope you're vibing with us so far. Next, we are going to introduce ourselves a little further, tell you a little bit about our personal and spiritual journeys right after this break. Ever wish your clothing could preach louder than a Sunday morning sermon, all while supporting your favorite podcast? Well, now it can. Introducing Eternal Threads, a clothing line that's divinely inspired and possibly more uplifting than your morning coffee. Like many of us, I wear my heart on my sleeve, but now I also wear my faith on my chest. Ditch the corporate logos and represent what you believe. Get ready to turn heads and maybe even hearts with our vibrant collections at eternalthreads.co.
Discover elegance with Sterling Adornments, where genuine gemstones and sterling silver craft stories of beauty. Each piece, a testament to God's gifts, is meticulously handcrafted for your moments and milestones. Embrace the unique, the pure, the divine. Start your journey at sterlingadornmentsus.etsy.com and find a jewel that speaks to you. That's sterlingadornmentsus.etsy.com, where every piece illuminates your inner glow.
All right, everyone, welcome back. All right, we're going to take a little time and talk about ourselves. Oh,
yucky.
Yeah. Okay, here we go. But no, seriously. Just like we want to get to know you, we would love for you to get to know us. For me, when I was young, I grew up without church. My mother and father were wonderful, supported me, let me explore, really trusted me, and I felt that trust. But I never have that church grounding to sort of shade my experience. I know several friends who grew up with church and actually are no longer religious in their own way. You know, maybe it didn't sit with them, maybe they got it forced on them, but I do find growing up without church, for me at least, was a good thing. It kept me curious and it kept me open to a lot of different things. So it's not just religion, but history, psychology, sciences. I mean, I remember when I was 15, 16, when Borders Books was still around, that I was picking up quantum physics books. I think it was The Fabric of the Cosmos and one other by author named Brian Greene. And I didn't understand it, but it's just was always drawn to it. I wanted to know why, how, what's going on. But even with physics, if you really go down to the quantum level, it really shows that we live in a magical world that we're just beginning to understand. So I've grew up curious, which I love more than anything. Growing up in Ohio, I then went to college at Kent State, where I got my economics degree. After college, I moved out to Denver while I was working at Apple. So I spent several years at Apple before venturing out into the job market. Apple was an amazing experience, great company. After so many years there, I definitely felt like I wanted something new. Definitely has been a hard journey since then because nobody is quite the same as Apple. So it's been hard to compare, which has led me to multiple different experiences since then, from everything from, you know, sales and management to I was actually a qualified mental health specialist at a behavioral school for a little while too. So, you know, pretty broad background for sure. But looking back now, it's all added up to a really amazing collection of experiences. I didn't really start to hit faith journeys until I went through a couple hard moments. Dark night of the soul, if you will, that really led me to this. Now, might be controversial to some, but I'd be remiss if I wasn't honest about it. Growing up and through college and, you know, on into the beginning of my adult life, I felt like I was doing what I should be doing and doing what I should be, what I was told, and was sort of in the programming, that American programming of, you know, grow up, go to college, get married, get a job, do it in this order. And it, you know, was a little constricting. Not everyone follows that, not only order, but if we've hit some roadblocks or had some hardships along the way, it tends to really dig at our self-worth, at whether we're, you know, am I capable of this? And it was hard to fit everyone inside that box. And it wasn't until I started to struggle against that box that I really started to seek. And it just so happened about that time, I had a close friend of mine come to visit me out in Denver, Colorado, where I was living. And he introduced me to DMT. Now, DMT is a psychedelic My whole life, I've always been interested in them, but I had never really done it. I've always enjoyed stories of the Beatles and, you know, all these famous people that have experienced these drugs and found some sort of enlightenment. Now, I don't know necessarily if you see God or, you know, I'm not going to put this in necessarily spiritual context. At the very base level, though, these experiences show you that this world that we live in is far, far more complicated. And just by changing our perception a little bit, we can see a much broader picture. I am an advocate of psychedelic research. I do believe in it. But it is also to be taken very seriously. Our current culture does make it too just jovial. We do it as a recreation, and that is far from the truth. These are plant medicines and spiritual experiences that really do deserve, you know, more credit and more research, which is why we're seeing that happen today. Now, this very one time I did this was unbelievable. I can't describe it. But however, what I will say is after this experience, I was shook. Okay. In the best ways possible, I'd say, but it was extremely captivating and confusing all at the same time. Afterwards, I spent a couple years even sorting it out. I, at that moment, decided to really take control of my life. I asked myself questions. Why am I doing these things? What's important? Is money the most important thing? And what's the purpose of my existence? And it just really dug those deep questions in. And it took a long time to figure it out. So definitely, definitely not for the weak-hearted. It is something that takes time, and it put me into a full dark night of the soul. And the big reason for that is really because of empathy. Before this, I was your typical male. I'm tough. I can handle it. Bury your emotions. But this experience really touched the core of me, and it made me feel things that I still feel every day today. I feel the ocean of sadness when, you know, I see a video of an abandoned puppy, and, you know, I feel the heights of joy from the simple things in life that I just never felt before. And the one thing I'll say is there's nothing healthier than a man who is able to cry. And before this, I wasn't, and now I don't shy away from those emotions. And that's something I think our whole country and world needs as large. Now, my Christ journey actually started with music. It was after these experiences. I left Colorado. I quit my job. I moved home. I just had this urge to get back to my roots, to be close to family, to be around people that I love, and just to put the process of career and progress and money and put all that on hold because there are more important things, and that is knowing yourself. Now, to do this, I unfortunately had lost a relationship, I had lost a job, and to be quite frank, I spent that first summer back in Ohio deeply depressed. I was just confused. I didn't know what. I spent this whole life focused on these certain things only to come to a conclusion that why is any of it important? And it felt like a major restart, and I was really upset. I mean, at the time, I was in my early 30s. And I just felt like I had to start completely new, and I didn't know where to go. As intelligent as I always feel, there are those moments in life where you are just lost. And it was scary. Sorry, I got a little emotional, but it was scary. And, it was an album by an artist called No Big Deal. So NOBIGDYL, No Big Deal. With a period that got me through that summer. That album is called Canopy, and every single song I still listen to today. And it was that album that saved me. I was so depressed, so sad. But not only did that album speak to just God, it spoke to positivity, but there's even a little reference to the Cavaliers championship, Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm a basketball fan. Sprinkled in the back of it. And even though this gentleman's not from Cleveland, I'm just like, oh, this is a perfect album for me. And it got me through. And since then, I've been a huge fan of Christian hip hop. We can talk about that for days, and I'd love to have some Christian hip-hop artists and other Christian artists on, you know, internal threads as well here. But that's where I first started to align with Christianity, was through this art and stories, and to show me that not only is there salvation, but a lot of fun as well. These songs are just hype. I love them. I'd love to share them with you. So even though hip-hop showed me that Christianity can be cool, I still didn't really understand it, and I still didn't have any type of actual connection to it. And being the seeker and the skeptic that I am, it wasn't until I read a couple of the books that we mentioned earlier that I really started to click. It first was The Celestine Prophecy, which is a great adventure story and just a fun read overall. But then it was The Immortality Key that gave me that historical context where it really started to click. Once I read The Immortality Key, it was just gangbusters. I wanted to know more. I wanted to figure it out because I had my aha moment. And that's what's so amazing about life, is that no matter what you have stored in your brain, until something just strikes you in the right way where that switch just flips, then everything from that point forward is different. And that's exactly what happened. So since then, I dug more, and I actually started to pick up the Bible itself. And ever since, the rest is history. It has been an incredible journey. And the most amazing part about this journey, and something that I want everyone to understand, is God and angels and all these things. I saw this somewhere that said that, you know, the evil spirits, demons, those type of stuff, they want to find you. They want to come get you. You know, they have their own motives where, you know, God, angels, they work best when you come to them. When you seek them out, they will listen. And that's exactly what I experienced through seeking God, through humbling myself and asking for help, the biggest piece. I think a lot of us men too tend to be that, oh, I got it all, do it all by myself. And asking for help is hard. And asking God for help sometimes doesn't even make any sense, but he's listening. He's always here. He's always listening. And he's ready to help if you call. So by calling, by praying, he's not going to come in and do it for you, but he will help show you the way. And this is part of the way he has shown me, to help bring us all together, to help preach every day the words that are going to help heal the wounds of society. And I am just so thankful to be here with you today and to be part of this amazing future that I hope we can create together. So that's a little bit about me, Emily. What can you tell us?
All right. Here we go. Well, I grew up going to a Methodist church in a reasonably strict home. Emphasis on the word reasonable. My parents had me memorize the Lord's Prayer. I went to summer Sunday school. We went to church every Sunday without fail. I'm very grateful to my parents for the way that they raised me. They really ingrained the Christian morals in me that never left me. So in sixth grade, I remember learning about other world religions, which planted a seed of curiosity in me and other beliefs. I was just curious about what other people think and the other ideas that are out there. But we lost my grandfather that year and stopped going to church for a couple years. It was pretty hard on the whole family. Fast forward, I was confirmed in the Presbyterian Church at 15, but I had already started to question my beliefs. I didn't like that we collectively were sitting in a room listening to some Joe Schmo tell us how to decipher the Bible and what to believe, how to think. So that started my rebellious phase. That turned into Wicca, which devolved into being a Satanist. Then I developed a goth aesthetic where angry with a capital A was my personality. Who wants to be around that? I was extremely depressed for years and tried multiple different antidepressant medications and nothing worked. I thought maybe worshiping myself would fix it, but it only made things worse. I kept having this pulling feeling in the back of my head, like I was going in the wrong direction. Meanwhile, I bought a Bible to strengthen my argument against Christianity and marked it up with angry notes. Looking back at it now, I just didn't understand what I was reading, especially when I had this angry filter over my eyes. I was blind. I was looking for reasons to be upset. And then one day, Daniel introduced me to God. I had had a particularly bad day and had started to question my beliefs again, making a U-turn from Satanism, but wandering about with unsure footing. He took me outside in the cold, outstretched his arms, looked up, and with a soft voice, he said, "Look at all of this. No human made this, God did. Isn't it amazing? He made it as a gift, all for you, and you're just as much a gift to the world." He pointed out that we could see the stars through the clouds, and I felt the midnight breeze. As we kept talking, I got emotional and felt like I had been ignoring God's presence that whole time, like he was there with me, but I was too angry and selfish to see him there and allow him into my heart. Then, like a switch was flipped, there was this powerful gust of wind and it started raining, first a sprinkle and then a downpour. Most recently, I felt God's presence here in this room just last week. I was having a bad day, so I decided to open my grandpa's Bible to a random page. For quick context, I've always been very shy and plagued by anxiety, especially when it comes to saying words out loud. So doing this podcast has been very stress-inducing. But at this point in my life, I don't want fear to control my life, so I'm doing it anyway. I had a panic attack that day, overthinking about what I wanted to say about my story and kept belittling myself about who I am and that nobody would care to hear about it. But Papa told me through this random page where he marked Matthew chapter 5, verses 14 through 16, that I am the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven.
If you guys didn't hear the Holy Spirit in that, I don't know where you will. That was amazing. And I thank Emily for her courage to do this with me, because I've seen that pain. I've seen that stress, and I've been with her here during every minute, even dragging her along with me to force her to do it with me, because this is something that we both want and are just so excited about. So that was beautiful.
I really appreciate your support, Daniel. And just for the record, I am here willingly. But I do believe that this is much bigger than just me. The truth is that nobody's going to be listening to this and caring about me or anything that I had to say. They care about the information. So,
oh, that's not true, Emily. I care. I care a whole bunch.
Well, what I'm saying is my anxiety is baseless. It doesn't make any logical sense.
Correct. It's the devil trying to trick you.
Right. Trying to stand in my way. And Jordan Peterson even mentioned this in the speech that he gave when we were there last week, is the story of Moses in Exodus. Not trying to compare myself to Moses in any way, of course, but this same theme occurs a lot in the Bible where someone is called to do something for God or for Christians and they feel inadequate and they feel like they're not good enough. In this part, it says in Exodus 14:14, "The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still." So in other words, you need to find a way to do it anyway, get past your limitations, because it's bigger than just this one moment. It's bigger than just you. There's a higher purpose.
And this is a great example to everybody. We want to promote these ideals because we believe in every last person we meet, and we want to inspire everyone to find their greatest cause and their greatest good. All right. For the last section of today's podcast, we want to tell you a little bit about our beliefs, which we will expose more in depth over time. But we consider ourselves to be Gnostic Christians or Christian Gnostics. Either way works. So let's talk about Gnosis a little bit more. Emily, can you tell us more about what the term Gnostic means?
Sure. So the term Gnostic derives from the Greek word gnosis, which means knowledge. Now, it's important to keep in mind that even the word itself has its own history. The word Gnosticism actually first appeared in print in 1669 in a book by the English poet and philosopher of religion, Henry Moore. Moore applied it to the religious groups referred to in ancient sources as Gnostikoi, a Greek word meaning those who have knowledge. So although you'll see the word Gnostic refer to several variations of Christianity, those groups generally didn't refer to themselves at the time as Gnostics. It's really used as an umbrella term for the heretics of that time. For reference, most of us are most likely familiar with the term agnostic, which means someone who doesn't know about the existence of God or isn't sure that there could be a God. Well, this is the antonym of that. A Gnostic person is one who seeks spiritual knowledge as a way of enlightenment.
Now, during the first several centuries AD, there were many different sects of Christianity, and they were mixed with all kinds of different traditions. Pagan traditions and ideas were definitely rampant at the time, and a lot of these traditions got mixed in. Dionysus was a major influence in Roman culture, and there are a lot of similarities between his story and that of Jesus as well. And it just provided a lot of chaos at the time to see kind of what was going to make it through to the final copy. Now, with Rome being the decider of that copy, they definitely cut out a lot of stuff that didn't fit the kind of patriarch of the time. This was written about by many people, even, which I just found out relatively recently, even Martin Luther King Jr. wrote about these mystery religions and how they influenced Christianity in one of his graduate papers, which was written in November 29th of 1949. So it is something that has been paid attention to and written about by many important people throughout time. Now, some of these traditions, once again, didn't fit with the patriarch. So in some of these Gnostic religions or some of the mystery Christian religions at the turn of the century, they provided equality for women, which didn't sit right, which is where we also believe that they took Jesus's favorite follower, Mary, and turned her into a prostitute, which we don't necessarily agree with either. Now, other things they did is they also sometimes didn't believe in titles, and they would let anybody preach and everyone be involved, which I also find very fascinating because it takes away that top-down authority and allows us all to be equal. But these were things that were just so against the norms that it had to be put away, and the world wasn't ready for it yet. So even though the word Gnostic has such a robust history, let's talk for a minute about what a modern Gnostic Christian is and what we think that means. Emily, do you want to get us started?
Absolutely. We believe that Jesus is king. We believe Jesus was a real man sent by God to fulfill biblical prophecy and provided us with an amazing example of how to live and one that we should all strive to follow. We believe that he was here to invoke a message of union between all peoples under God. And here's a red flag for you to watch out for anybody who thinks that they are a chosen people. One of the main messages that Jesus promoted is that all Gentiles were welcome to share in the Abrahamic faith, and we're firm believers that we're all one human tribe, and Jesus was the invitation to put down our walls and come together through his example.
Yeah, and that's, you know, not only is there people, you know, of different religions that believe that only them, but there are different Christians that believe only them, and we just think there's a little bit more play than that, and it's a bigger mystery. Which comes to our second point is God is unknowable. Anyone who gives God form or gender or physical characteristics tends to be a little misleading in our opinion. By giving God or even Jesus an image or form, by default, it tends to favor the group of people in which the image is a reflection of. We don't know the color of Jesus, let alone the form of God. In future episodes, we'll talk about that fact that in early Christianity, because of its continual persecution, they used hidden symbolism, and the first Christian art was actually only discovered in the 3rd century. Now, If you've read the Bible like I have, you know that it does not give a physical description of Jesus. So 300 years later, when that first art was discovered, no one had a clue what he actually looked like, and there were zero records to reference. So the first depictions of Jesus were actually very Greek-looking, where they had curly blonde hair, and he had a boyish, completely shaven face. He looked very friendly, not quite the sad, you know, sacrifice Jesus on the cross that we kind of grew up with. So I can't wait to go over that history with you, because I found that to be very interesting, too. But if you looked at other faces, although they are more eye for an eye instead of turn the other cheek, so this is where we disagree, this is one thing I really respect about Islam. The fact that they acknowledge the dangers of idol worship and only let their prophet Muhammad be depicted in name alone. It's about the teaching, not the teacher. We feel there are many Christians out there who tend to forget this, and we can't worship our way out of sin, and we must only do it by walking the path.
Another core philosophy for us is that the only way to get to know God is to look within. So one text that we will quote from and talk more about is the Gospel of Thomas. Rather than a historical narrative like the other Gospels, this is a collection of sayings from Jesus. Each one starting with, Jesus said, think of this like a New Testament Proverbs. But one that sticks out to me and helps give some clarity to this idea is verse 3. Jesus said, if those who lead you say to you, see, the kingdom is in the sky, then the birds of the sky will precede you. If they say to you, it is in the sea, then the fish will precede you. Rather, the kingdom is inside of you and is outside of you. We can see this from the saying that Jesus is telling us that heaven is not a physical place, but a state of being. The one book I mentioned earlier is Inner Engineering, which reiterates this idea. To quote pieces of page 31, so as long as your inner life is enslaved to external situations, it will remain a precarious condition. The way out is a very simple change in direction. You just need to see that the source and basis of your experience is within you. Pain or pleasure, joy or misery, agony or ecstasy happens only inside you. We'll break this down more in depth as we go and show that the best way to seek God is to look deeply inward.
Now, a final kind of just idea about what we think being a Gnostic means is also a little bit controversial sometimes, because anytime you talk about history with people, they tend to have opinions. but we're realistic with our historical stories. We want to not only live by faith, but we want to be seekers. So we do integrate history, science, philosophy, and seek multiple accounts to help tell a full story of our history. We acknowledge that all religious texts were ultimately written and ultimately rewritten multiple times by men, and all men are flawed. So even the very first gospel, the Gospel of Mark, was written 35 or so years after the death of Jesus. Now, that alone is a good gap, but what is also interesting is that if you consider that Jesus's followers were working-class Jews who only wrote in Aramaic, the original Gospel of Mark was actually written in Greek. So already, the first stage of the game of spiritual telephone in a long line of senders and receivers leading up to today. So there's plenty of possibility of mistranslations, miscommunications that we need to take account of. We do believe that some of the texts have either been altered, disregarded, or purposely buried to fit different political motives throughout time, which is also why we believe that we are currently living in the time of revelations where all is being revealed. So along the way, to us, being a Gnostic Christian means being a true seeker, but also embracing the fact that we live in the mystery of God's creation. There was a famous 9th century Chinese Buddhist monk who said, if you meet the Buddha on the road, kill him. Pretty extreme sounding, I know. However, what that means is that if you meet someone that says that he is the answer or has all the answers, he is just about always a false prophet and should be disregarded. Like Jesus said in Mark 8:27, who do the people say I am? We believe in actions and not in titles. So anyone who says that they have all the answers, you should always be a little cautious.
These are just a couple little seeds we wanted to plant in your brains about what we think it means to be a modern Gnostic Christian. But this is what we want to develop and explore together with you here on this podcast. If you stayed to listen through this full episode, tears and all, I want to express my deepest gratitude to you for spending your time with us. We can't wait to tell you more and explore these biblical adventures together.
Well, folks, what an exhilarating journey we're embarking upon today. From the thought-provoking words of Andy Weir's The Egg to our discussions about Gnosticism, it's been quite the adventure already. Best part is, we're just getting started. Next episode, we're going to spend some time discussing the egg in depth, so make sure you finish the story by then, and we will focus on why we decided to follow Jesus to become Christians. Until then,